to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
Happy New Year's.
Thank you, Taz. It is the Persian New Year.
Persian New Year with fire jumping.
Oh my God, I missed the fire. You know what? I didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything?
I didn't do anything.
You're so adamant about jumping fires.
I've been kind of depressed. It's a depressing time.
It is a depressing time. We've also been very busy traveling.
Oh my God. Okay, do you get that thing that I get where you don't know like what day it is or what city you're in?
I literally had this moment last week where I was driving through. I was like, what city am I today? Yeah, I have no idea where I'm at. Finally, I know where I'm at. I'm in LA. We're in LA right now. We're at the Potluck Podcast Studio recording live. Finally, we're back here. But yeah, it's been a hectic, hectic month.
Yeah, the only thing grounding me today was that it's also National Puppy Day.
Oh.
It won't be when this podcast airs, but you can take a moment to just be like, yay, puppies.
The thing that's grounding me today is I don't think there's anything grounding me today.
That sounded very much like a balloon just like going just, off into...
Nothing. Nothing is grounding me today. Mm. You might have to pull me down.
Oh, that's what that hand gesture was.
Pull me down.
She just made like a power fist. Oh, it's actually just bring me back down to earth.
Bring me back down.
We've both been doing a lot of traveling. You've been to Boston, Tampa, D.C., Atlanta, and Oakland.
Yes. Yeah.
In the last month?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's more cities than there are weeks in a month.
Yeah, it was a lot. I don't know where I'm at. What city are we in, Zara?
This is L.A. Okay. We're in L.A. L.A.
We had a lot of fun in Tampa. We were out there for the AWP conference. It was a convening of 13,000 writers or something like that.
Yeah, I was surprised at how many people don't know what AWP stands for.
I know.
Association of Writers on Writing Programs.
Oh, because I didn't know what that stood for either. It was just like, it's just a writer's conference. I don't know. W's for writers. Yeah, it was this amazing convening that happens annually. And Zara and I spoke on a panel about being Muslim women writers without having to address being Muslim women writers.
Did we reveal to people that you were on three panels?
I was on three panels.
Which is not allowed.
Yeah, you're only supposed to be on two panels. Yeah, it was really cool. It was my first time like really jumping into the conference like this. I was really excited. There's a lot of poetry. We had a poetry panel for Poetry Day for Ramadan, but I was really excited to meet poets in the room and just going to all these panels. I don't know.
I heard from our friends in poetry, Kieran, Khan, and Faisal, that this is the golden era of poetry.
It is the golden era of poetry. It was also like there were so many writers of color. And I was walking around just going to all the panels where – like if it was a Vona panel or awesome people of color panels. And it was really centering to see that we as writers aren't existing in this vacuum and surrounded by white writers, that our voices and our stories are being told. And it was really, really inspiring.
Yeah, I was overwhelmed, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was overwhelmed and then I was annoyed because the whole thing probably costs close to like $3,000 to go.
Yeah.
And that made me angry.
Yeah. It was a very expensive trip. Mine was not as expensive as Zara's
was. It was so pricey.
But the registration cost was really high.
Yeah. I mean, also don't do everything late like I did. That's a huge part of it.
Yes.
And it's also like a big thing for MFA programs. Like all these universities pay for their staff, fellowships, faculty to go.
Yeah, it's a big critique of the program, of the conference.
I do want to mention, like, at the time of this recording, we may not have universities anymore.
Oh, right, right.
Universities were institutions that housed educated professors of different kinds of majors. A major was a thing that you studied.
Yeah.
Studying was a thing that people did. Reading was a thing that people did.
Right. The major of English might not even exist anymore. History and English are a thing of the past in the state of Wisconsin, apparently, in some universities. But, you know, this might also happen at other
schools. That feels like a men's rights activist opportunity to be like, damn straight. The English language is disappearing.
Who needs the English language when you have a president that tweets all the time? So on the panel that we were on, we had an awesome co-presenter with us.
Yes. And we should also mention our awesome panel moderator and organizer, our friend Kieran Khan, and Moja Kaff, very popular writer. A lot of her work is what made me feel like I had more ownership of my religion.
Interesting.
I'm going to paraphrase. I'm not directly quoting here, which is what paraphrase means. I'm just mentioning that because
we don't have universities.
We don't have universities anymore. Yeah. She has this brilliant writing on Prophet that for Iranians, we say Hajar, but other people say Hagar.
Isn't Hagar the Harry Potter character?
That's Hagrid. But oh my God, I wish the Quran had a Hagrid. That'd be pretty awesome. Anyways, she uses Hajar's story to shine a light on how, what's the word for when something is like so critical?
Yeah, I really wish we had a university that we could have gone to have learned all these things.
Damn it. That it's just fundamental to the religion to argue with the Quran, to question it. And it spoke to me so much that, like, you know, the scientific method came from Muslims.
Yeah.
You know, because this is inherent to the culture that is Islam.
Yeah.
You know, that is in this book and in this story that she shared. And it was just so fantastic. Find it. Find her. What did you think of the panels, Taz? How was it for you?
It was cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed being able to see brown writers perform and speak. After a while, it did get a little overwhelming, so I had to take a break.
What do you do when you're overwhelmed?
We went to the water, and we just looked at the water, because it was Tampa.
Oh, that's
and
pretty.
It was, like, pretty, and then the water was right there. It was actually, usually you go to these conferences, and they're in these, like, big urban spaces where there is no beach, but it was the beach. The beach was right there, so it was cool. And yeah, we got to hang out with cool friends. So it was cool.
I was excited to see the Patricia Smith tribute. That was amazing.
What did you see?
It was students of hers from over the years that she'd mentored who were reading her poems.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know where I was for that, but I missed it.
It was so rejuvenating, so inspiring. It was worth it just for that.
I left the conference with a huge stack of books. That are in your place.
That I forgot to bring today.
You forgot to bring it. That's okay. I'm still behind on all my reading, so it's not like I'm super stressed. But it was also just really cool to like walk around the book floor and find books of people that you want to support.
Yeah.
I no longer like buy books that I want to read. I just look at books and go like, who do I want to support? Because, you know, you can go to the library for the other books.
Reading is such a novelty.
I know. I have such a hard time reading because there's no time for it. But
there's no time for anything but just terror.
There's terror. You know, I was going to say that I listen to a lot of books. I don't have time to read, but I find that the last book I read was The Monk of Mocha by Dave Eggers.
Oh, you were raving about this.
I loved it. It was so good. But I did an audiobook of it. And so, like, just being able to hear a book was really – I think because we are podcasters, we use – audio talking as our medium now, I'm kind of drawn to listening to people talk their books.
Yeah, me too. Like, now that I think about it, I've actually consumed like 12 books in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you've been doing a lot of audiobooks too.
I didn't think about it that way. Like, I think about reading as like reading, sitting down and reading. Because the act of reading is so important.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I see it as like a health thing.
No, for sure. Like, I definitely miss the act of reading, but I think that both of us are actually intaking a lot of audiobooks.
Yeah, yeah. The Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Was a fantastic.
You did the audiobook of that?
Audiobook, yeah. The plane ride over
to
Tampa.
Oh my gosh. I need to hear. Have you seen the movie yet?
No.
I need to see what your comparison is because the movie moves away from the book in many ways.
Yeah, you tweeted that it made you anxious.
Yeah, it made me anxious.
Oh my God. Also, Black Panther was amazing.
It was amazing.
I cried like beginning to end.
Yeah, I didn't cry, but I was definitely on the edge of my seat. Yeah, it was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
This is what happens when you have podcasts once a month.
Yeah.
There's so much that happens that I didn't get
so much,
to,
yeah.
like, talk about with you.
Yeah. Black Panther was amazing. So good.
But I still haven't seen Wrinkle in Time, no. Anyway, we were saying that we do read a lot.
Yeah.
Just in audio form.
Yeah.
That was a long tangent to rejuvenate ourselves.
But go buy books. Go buy books. Support writers.
All right. Taz, terrorism.
Terrorism.
Did you ever think that we would live in a time where a suicide bomber would not be labeled a terrorist?
He was just a nerd, Zara. He was a nerd who was going through some difficult times, a lone wolf.
Who was sad.
He was just a sad, sad white little boy. Just
had
a sad white boy.
Nothing to do with any kind of dogma or villainy. He wasn't even villainous.
Yeah.
He was just a sad.
Just sad.
Sad white boy.
Nerd. I hate that they took the term nerd for that because, you know, I kind of identify with nerd culture. Like, I grew up wearing glasses and reading books and being smart, and he doesn't get to take that. He's a terrorist.
Can you condemn him on behalf of all nerds?
I've seen a few posts saying, like, why did they label nerd on him? That's not cool.
I think because they're saying, don't be a nerd, be a Nazi.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the message.
Message is, be a Nazi.
I didn't identify as a nerd ever.
Really?
No. I identify strongly as a dork.
A dork, oh. I was nerd.
Totally different.
Nerd and sometimes geek. but definitely more nerd than geek.
I was the dork that was always thrown in with the nerds.
Oh, yeah.
And eaten alive. Because I didn't read anything they were talking about. I didn't know any of the references. And they were like, oh, my God, how do you not know?
Oh, yeah, you were a dork. I was definitely, like, reading all the right things and following all the nerd culture. That being said, you are not a terrorist.
Thank you. I will use that in my court hearing. I'll use that audio clip.
Yeah, you are not a terrorist.
Thank you. You are not a terrorist either, Tess.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. This guy, though, is a terrorist. Yes. I don't even know what his name is. He was sending explosives to mainly black leaders in Austin.
Prominent black leaders and Latino.
Mm-hmm. And there's one instance where two people got killed.
I think people who were running for office.
Yeah, I think so, too. And there was one incident where, like, a tripwire was triggered and, like, two white people died that way. But that was kind of, like, not targeted. And then a box exploded in the headquarters of, I believe, FedEx or something.
Okay, here's what I want to know. Why are we even bothering with surprise at this point, at this kind of gaslighting? Like, why can't we just summarize this, right, as, like, and I'm speaking to the woke media folks.
Yeah.
Can't we just, like, summarize this by saying, and law enforcement gaslighted America by saying.
Well, I think media is gaslighting America right now, too, because I think that the reporting that's been coming out about this has been very white supremacist, you know, very leaning towards not calling him a terrorist. And there's all this fear of like, oh, we can't call him a terrorist. But that's bullshit. It's explosives. It's going to houses. It's targeting certain kind of people.
But Taz,
it's terrorism.
Some white people were involved.
The white people that were involved were accidental involvement.
Or who knows why.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't even matter who the target is. Honestly, like, if there's an explosive, that should be what a terror... Like, what is the definition of terrorism? It's to cause fear in people, right? This cause is, terror. Yeah. So if there is a box exploding, causing fear in a particular community, that is terrorism.
Period.
Period.
But this is why I get so angry. Because just having to defend it. It's so obvious. You shouldn't even have to.
Yeah.
1 + 1 = 2. Man terrorizing a community is a terrorist.
Yes.
I'm sorry if he's white.
I'm not.
I was being sarcastic.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so I think we talk about this all the time on our show about using the right words. We're all about making sure that people are using the right words, and this is definitely one of those things. Once again, like, I also don't think that, like, I haven't seen it as much for this case, that I don't think it should be, like, all the Muslim folks should be like, we need to label him as a terrorist, too. Because that kind of backlash is always just kind of depressing, that you see Muslims having to defend themselves with this whole, like,
not a... Well, because then it's centered around us, even when it's not about us.
Yeah, and that was what we talked about a couple of episodes ago. So I kind of do appreciate that there hasn't been so much of that happening on this case. But it also kind of makes me think that, oh, my gosh, maybe it's because... the victims are black. What if this is like anti-blackness coming out and that's why we're not hearing about this in the community?
Absolutely. It's also really disorienting because, like, when you say we're not hearing or we are hearing, I'm like, I don't know where you're talking about. Is that Twitter? Is that Facebook? Is that the echo chamber I live in? Is that CNN? Is it MSNBC?
Is the Cambridge Analytica bubble that we all live in now?
Exactly. Talk about scary.
Manipulated by Cambridge Analytica.
That is a horrible thing that has happened.
That is so horrible. I'm still trying to understand it, so I don't feel prepared to talk about it.
When you are, I would love the debrief.
I'll give the good Muslim, bad Muslim breakdown of how we're being manipulated by the whole industry of manipulation.
Standard line. Manipulated by the industry of manipulation. Also, I want to mention, killed by law enforcement was Stephon Clark.
Yeah.
Who was shot 20 times.
Yeah, this happened at the same time. In his backyard, because they saw his cell phone and thought it was a gun, which is bullshit because a cell phone looks nothing like a gun.
Also, that was later.
Oh.
When the story first broke, because this happened in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And I'm a Northern California girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this right away. And the first mention was he was holding a toolbox.
Oh.
They also sighted him via helicopter.
Yeah, there's footage of that around, of the shooting happening. I haven't seen it because I can't
20
watch this.
Times. 20. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
The suicide bomber got just one, the one from Austin, which is, I mean, that's how the implicit bias of white supremacy works in law enforcement.
In 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Not even suspected. Also, Stephon Clark was shot, according to the policeman that shot him, because he was suspected of breaking into cars.
Ugh.
Not bombing people.
Yeah.
Systematically terrorizing a city.
My car got broken into, and when I went to the police, they said that, oh, just don't worry about it. They, like, didn't do anything about it. It's so commonplace, which makes it seem like this is just an excuse. Just saying that it's because no one cares about car break-ins. Police definitely don't care about car break-ins. That's a stupid excuse if all of a sudden police say that it's a car break-in.
We live in the United States of terror.
We do, for a certain kind of people. Mm. Speaking of living in a state of terror, very sad case coming out of Oregon that happened this past week. This Afghani interpreter named Mohammad Fawad Mohammadi, who worked for the U.S. military, he was in Afghanistan as a translator. He was attacked by a man in Oregon with a car. He was, I guess there was some road ragey conversation that happened. And then the man saw that his wife was in the car and his wife was in hijab. And then I think Muhammad got out of the car to confront the guy. And at that moment, he got rammed and his legs got smashed, I think, 3 times. And he had to get his legs amputated.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, the thing that I was thinking about when we were going over this is that I've seen at least 3 incidences on Facebook of friends or people that I know that have been talking about how they've been followed and yelled at by people. This kind of increase of attacks, I guess, but it's not even like actual physical attacks, but just like verbal abuse.
That's the kind of assault.
Yeah. It's so scary. So, so scary. On the plus side of hate crimes.
Oh, really? Say more.
The mosque that was bombed in Minnesota, they found the people that bombed it. And of course, they were 3 white supremacists. They were 3 men who wanted to scare Muslims out of the country and show them, hey, you're not welcome here. Get the fuck out. Can it be any more clear?
Did Homeland Security, the FBI, and law enforcement find these gentlemen by
20 shots?
20 shots? No.
No. think they took them profiling? In alive.
Profiling? Alive. Did they profile the entire state and city looking
of Minnesota?
For, yeah.
And white folks? No. No. They just took
or
them
even
in.
Just white supremacists.
You know how nicely they took them in? One of the men is an owner of a company that submitted a bid to President Trump to build the wall. That's how
we live in the United States of terror.
Thanks, Trump.
Taz, I live in a constant state of terror, and it wasn't helped when John Bolton was named as Trump's new national security advisor.
It's so ridiculous, the turnover that's happening at the White House right now. It's just like one after the other. It's a little hard for me to keep up with, but from what I understand, John Bolton is a really evil man that was behind one of the Iraq wars and has really, really bad ideas.
Namely, going to war with Iran.
Oh, so that's why everyone that I've been following has been saying that now, if that he's going to be in office, that seems to be a sure shot.
When he was appointed to office, I got a slew of text messages from different Iranian friends saying, this is it. This is the time to leave. This is it. We're already banned as a country. They're going to ask us to register. The camps are going to start. It's time to go.
Mm.
Regardless of whatever you're doing in a day, I mean, my heart sinks. I get a wash of acid reflux in my face.
Yeah.
And I'm paralyzed. And I hate that these tactics of theirs, which, let me be clear, I do think that what we're headed for is war with Iran. I mean, that is what all of their actions lead me to believe.
Right.
And what I'm terrified of. Also, the tactics of exhaustion work, and it makes me so angry that they do.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was talking about was that I'm at the same level of terror as when Trump got into office. Like, that hasn't really stopped. So knowing that he's going to be in office doesn't mean that, like, all of a sudden I'm more scared than I was 2 years ago. But I do think, I was just listening to, I forgot which podcast I was listening to, is that something about, like, how people of color have a shorter span of life because they're so stressed out by life itself, because the stress that we take on as people of color is extra.
More. Yes. Oxytocin. That's like at the core of every TED talk. No, I know. It's the opposite. Cortisol is all we get. Cortisol, 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 cortisol.
I wish I had oxytocin. That's not what I'm getting in this life right now. Yeah. So I know I should be extra scared, but I'm just so tired of being scared because every week there's some reason to be scared.
Well, you know how it feels for me is like when he first was elected, I remember remarking to a friend, this feels like we're just watching a serial killer walk to the store, buy the gun, buy the equipment, just watching him put up on his corkboard all of the 8x10s of the people that he wants to attack.
Yeah.
Just watching the whole thing play out, seeing our faces up there.
Yeah.
I mean, to speak to your point of like, I'm not more scared than I was at the election.
Yeah.
And everything is speeding up.
Yeah.
The physical threats are coming. It feels like they're more and more present. I feel like I'm in more and more danger. Like
I feel that, but I also feel like, you know, now we have Stormy Daniels out there. We have like all these other, like Cambridge Analytica. There's all these other things that are coming up in the news that are kind of on the opposite side of that, right? They're all like, I'm seeing all the other potential attacks on Trump that are coming up.
Yeah, I hear you. Like the things that are triumphs. But breaks in the case. And
breaks in the case. I don't think they're triumphs yet, because if we were in a proper civic society, Congress would see all this shit coming up and they would say like, oh, we need to do something about this president. But we are currently not in an actual democracy anymore.
No, we're clearly run by arms dealers that are destabilizing the United States.
Yeah. And that's the part that's scarier to me. But I am excited to hear about. I enjoy Stormy Daniels' tweets right now, you know? Because the way she's like this, being this porn star and just embracing it and saying like, I got video of this guy. And you're just like, all right, what? This is like a great reality show now. Like, if we're going to reality show this shit, like, let's fucking like do it real.
That's not my spot right now because I'm worried about my family. I wish that I could celebrate the porn star. I shouldn't say it, but sex worker.
Sex worker.
Sex also, worker. Porn star. Porn star is kind of fabulous. I don't
feel
know.
Like she uses porn star.
We're down with porn star, right?
Yeah, I think I'm down with porn
Somebody
star.
Somebody tweet at me and tell me if we're down with porn star. This feels like a great time for a word from our sponsor.
Zara?
Yes?
I love sleeping.
Oh my God, Taz. I love sleeping so much.
I heard that you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping. So if you're spending that much time in bed, you might as well be comfortable.
And I also heard that a company called Casper offers 2 mattresses to choose from online. The Wave and the Essential.
That sounds interesting.
You know what else is interesting? It has a hassle-free return policy if you're not completely satisfied.
This sounds like I need to be getting a Casper mattress soon.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, there's free shipping.
In the US and in Canada?
Yes. So if we leave and we go to Canada, we can also still order there too.
I'm so excited about getting a Casper mattress.
And did you know that it has sink and bounce?
Bounce?
And sink.
And sink.
Sink and bounce.
Oh, that does it. I think I need to get one. I think all of our listeners need to get one.
You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial.
Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/good and using the promo code good at checkout. That's G-O-O-D. Terms and conditions apply.
Always.
Always.
We're back. And Taz, do I have a creeping Sharia for you?
Oh my gosh, what is it?
You have no idea.
I actually do, and I've heard of it before.
What?
Yeah.
You know about Dick Dale?
I know about Dick Dale.
You know about Pulp Fiction?
I'm a little punk rock kid, Zara. You know this about me.
You know that I influenced Van Halen and Jimi Hendrix?
You know, I was like in mosh pits just listening to like surf pop punk.
Surf pop punk? I don't even know what that is.
I don't know. It was just like pop punk at the beach.
I wish I was cool like you.
Well, tell me what you learned.
Okay, Dick Dale, the guy who was made famous for my generation by the Pulp Fiction guitar riff.
We're the same generation.
Well, I'm saying for our listeners out there.
Right.
You're like way older than me, though. He's Muslim. Or Muslim-y. He's Muslim. His real name is Richard Mansour.
Mansour is totally Muslim. He's Muslim.
And that song is Muslim.
What song are you talking about?
Song can't be Muslim, but it is now.
How does it go? Okay, so I can totally see how that's Muslim-ish.
Totally
Muslim-ish. So that means every time those weird white guys in college has those Pulp Fiction posters on their walls and they were like all about the song.
Actually, creeping Sharia. Yeah. All right, what you got?
I've been watching the show on HBO called Here and Now. When I first started it, I didn't know what to expect. It was like these two older white couple, and they have, I think, 4 kids, and 3 of them are adopted. So there's like a black one, an Asian one, a Latino one, and then they have a white daughter.
This is not problematic. This sounds
very problematic. It sounds very problematic. So I was kind of like on the edge of going like, is this problematic? And then there's like a little bit of mysticism that comes into it because one of the kids has visions.
Oh.
And he has visions and he sees 11-11 everywhere. And then some other members of the family start seeing 11-11 everywhere. So that one kind of drew me in because I'm weirdly into that kind of stuff. And then that kid goes to a psychiatrist and the psychiatrist is Iranian. And then we start learning the backstory of that Iranian family. So there's like 4 or 5 families here. And then that story is just so fascinating because they have a Muslim teenage kid who goes to school with the white teenage girl of the other family. And it's the month of Ramadan and they're fasting and the dad doesn't fast, but the mom fasts and the kid fasts, but the kid is wearing a hijab at the table. So it's this trans Muslim character in this kid. And like both parents are very supportive of this kid who's going through his own journey.
Is the kid the main protagonist?
No, the kid is not the main protagonist. The white couple and their kids are the main family.
Oh, of course.
But I've never seen a Muslim trans teenage kid portrayed on any media I've ever watched.
Wow.
And I'm on episode 6. They just had this really beautiful scene where the Muslim kid took the white kid to the mosque. I really want you to watch it. One of the things that was really beautiful about kind of the narrative that's happening with this is that the dad is more scared of the kid going out as a Muslim man on the street versus as a queer person on the street.
Hmm.
And just that kind of like how they're playing with that contradiction is really well done. I think it's really well done.
Islam is the new gay.
It is. This is like the 3rd teen Muslim queer kid that I've seen in, I watch a lot of YA-ish TV shows, but like in the Bold type, there's a,
that's right, yeah,
a queer female.
Yeah, she's Iranian, yeah.
In Degrassi High.
Nice.
There's a queer Syrian girl, and then this show. And I'm just like, wow. Queer Muslim kids are very well represented in television now.
I'm just in awe of how much you're able to keep up with.
I am single and I watch a lot of TV. Netflix and chill has a completely different meaning for me. But I also don't watch Jaws on repeat, so.
That's true.
I'm sure it is that thing too.
I could probably fit a lot more in if I didn't watch Jaws 200 times.
Yeah.
My skeptical face is because I don't believe that they'll ever put a positive portrayal of an Iranian on television for like a really long time.
I think this is a pretty positive portrayal, though.
We'll see. We'll see.
You should watch it. It's really good.
Okay, I'm going to watch it. Okay, Tez, I have a fatwa for you.
Uh-huh.
Small seats on planes.
Oh, I have one, too, that kind of relates to that.
What?
Manspreaders. In when you're sitting in the small seat in the plane, and then they manspread it all over you, and you're just like, why are you touching me? Ugh.
Yeah, fatwa that.
Fatwa that. What's your fatwa related to?
Okay, I have, according to my physical therapist, a broad, wide rib cage that requires the 2 extra inches that they cut from all American Airlines, all United Airlines, all Delta Airlines, which thusly makes it so that I only fly JetBlue, because also Muslims fly JetBlue.
I have chubby thighs, and I don't like my thighs touching another man's thighs whose thighs are much skinnier than mine. But then they have this like imaginary cage that their cock needs to go into because they think it's like a certain size. They need to spread their legs out. The thing is, if there's another man on the other side, they're not touching the other man. But if they see a woman, they're like all over the woman's skin. I am so over that.
Damn.
Well, I've been on a lot of planes lately. So.
Also, chubby is my favorite word.
Yeah. I have chubby thighs. I'm reclaiming my chubby thighs.
Chubby and Episcopalian are my 2 favorite words.
Episcopalian?
See? It's a fun word.
I don't even know how to say it. Okay, but that's not actually my fatwa.
Okay, what's your fatwa?
My Blue Apron box was stolen from in front of my apartment.
What?
I was so upset.
Your Blue Apron box was stolen?
Yeah.
Those are expensive.
They are expensive. Also, like, I plan my groceries around them, so I didn't have anything to eat. And I called up the delivery service, and I, like, yelled at them. I was like, well, I didn't yell. I was, like, very stern because I don't yell. But I was like, my package never got delivered. There's an issue happening, and they refunded me.
I feel like you're yelling, but anyway.
And then I go downstairs the next morning, and I look in the dumpster, and someone had dismantled the Blue Apron box because they were responsible enough to not just steal but also dismantle the box and make it flat. And I picked up the box, and I looked at it, and it was my box because it was my name on it. Then I was like, oh, there's some motherfucker in this building not just stealing my Blue Apron, but they're using it and then dismantling the box and throwing it away very responsibly, which is this other level of stealing, which I just infuriating. So then to figure out who it was, I was like, I'm going to prank them because I am a juvenile teenager at heart. And I got another box, another like Blue Apron box. And then I like Googled pranks. And then most of the pranks were like, you should get dog poop and put it in the box so that when they open it, like the dog poop falls out, which is very genius. I've looked at the construction of this.
I have dog poop I can give you.
I will come for your dog poop next time.
All right.
But I also don't like touching dog poops, which is why I don't have a dog.
Fair.
So then I found one, which was like, you use those New Year's popper things, you know, the things where you like pull on it and
yes.
it like explodes.
Yes.
Confetti, you know, it's pleasant confetti. So I rigged it so that when you opened up the box, it would pop confetti all over. And then it says, stop stealing my shit in a note inside it. Instagram story, the whole thing. And so then I put the box out. I put it out around 5 o'clock. And then I keep like opening the door and I don't have like a little peephole. And then 15 minutes afterwards, it's gone. And then I start wandering around my hallway just trying to see if I can hear like poppers going off. And then I knew which people hadn't come home yet because there had been a note in the door that our management had put. I assumed it was someone on my floor to have seen it within 15 minutes.
Did you hear it?
I think I heard the corner house. And then I started talking to all my neighbors that night too. And I was like, did someone steal my package? They're like, why are you having packages delivered to your door in this neighborhood? And I'm just like, that should be, that's my right as an American to get a Blue Apron to come to my door. And then I figured out which apartment it was because I heard a lot of commotion. Then I was like, oh, that's the building that the cops are always coming to. And I was like, oh, I don't want to start a fight with MS-13.
Oh, boy.
So I'm not going to do any more pranks. But I was really, I was really all about it for that weekend. I got kind of a little obsessed with it. And now I have a stockpile of boxes of food delivery services from friends, of empty boxes that I can turn into prank boxes.
You gave MS-13 a confetti surprise.
I did.
Also, can somebody please animate that entire story? Oh, my God.
If you were a friend of mine on Instagram, you would have seen my explosive box.
What's your awkward ask a Muslim?
My awkward ask a Muslim is not mine. It is my sister's. I had a few that I wanted to use, but I had dinner with my little sister last night, and she told me the story. My family's from Bangladesh. Our people are called Bengali. And her coworker, who is Korean, raised in the Philippines and an American citizen, was talking to my younger sister. And she goes like, oh, so you're Bengali? And my sister's like, yeah, I'm Bengali. And she also has another Bengali person in the office. So they were talking about being Bengali. And then her friend goes, oh, I just watched a movie about you guys. And my sister's like, there's no Bengali movie out there. I don't know what you watch. And she was like, well, was it The Namesake? And she's like, no, not The Namesake. And my sister's like, was it a Bollywood movie? And she's like, no, I just watched a movie about you guys. And then my sister goes back to her desk and the friend just kind of doesn't want to drop it. 10 minutes later, her friend comes in the room and like has her phone. She goes like, I found the movie that I was talking about. And she's like, it was the movie about with John Krasinski and it's about Benghazi. Because she thought Bengali was Benghazi. And my sister's like, what?
Awkward.
Yeah, it was the 13 hours, the secret soldiers of Benghazi. You guys, Benghazi and Bengali, totally different. Totally, different.
It's not their fault. We don't have universities anymore.
We don't have universities. My sister was like dying inside. And she was like, this is my coworker. I have to be nice to her.
Oh, this is totally an awkward ask a Muslim.
She's just like, you know that this is, nope, that's not right. That's not Benghazi. And then she's like, oh, I'm just so culturally confused.
Oh my God.
It was so funny.
There's just so many brown people.
There's so many, just so culturally confused.
Culturally confused.
Benghazi and Bengali. Totally different.
Yeah, also, one is a city. Let's maybe start there. Not a people.
It's so funny, though.
My awkward ask a Muslim. Crying on planes is awkward.
Yeah. Was it because you were watching Coco?
No, though everybody says that. That would be the one time where I would feel joyous.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of narratives of people crying watching Coco on a plane.
Like everybody.
Yeah.
Now I start to get tweets that are like, I'm about to watch Coco. I'm not going to cry. And then I'm crying to Coco on a plane.
So it wasn't that?
No, I was crying to John Bolton's assigning and the future of Iran.
When I'm on a plane, I don't get access to news because I don't fly first class.
Girls, because you don't fly JetBlue.
I've been watching a lot of movies. I'm not watching the DirecTV, I think, is what's happening. So I kind of get lost. Playing time has been for me being passively aggressive and elbowing whoever's sitting next to me and manspreading all over me while watching a rom-com of some sorts.
Well, I get news because when I'm on a plane, I fly so much that when I'm on a plane, I know to turn off my Wi-Fi right away.
Yeah.
During the boarding period of time and just use my cell service. And then I tweet all the way until like we're in the air. Should I be admitting this right now?
Because you're not supposed to, or
you're supposed to put it on airplane mode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you have the Wi-Fi on, then it inhibits your cell reception.
This is true.
So I turn off the Wi-Fi and then I get more tweet time, which you no one needs.
Have gamed the system, Zara.
For Twitter? Oh, my God.
Cambridge Analytica.
I'm going to turn it off.
Just turn it off.
Turn it off and watch Coco.
Turn it off. Just watch Coco. Just watch and rom-coms.
All right, it's time for a good Muslim award.
We both have kind of similar ones because we both went to amazing Muslim spaces.
Spaces. I'm just spaces. Really enjoying this, like, other Taz, the, like, jet-setting Taz that now sounds more like me. What's time? What day is it?
Spaces is.
What city is this?
And who knows? We were both around Muslim-es peoples.
Muzzies.
Muzzies.
You were hanging with the Muzzies in Georgia.
Yeah, you were hanging out with the ones that were media-ish, and I think I was hanging around the voting-ish ones.
Yeah, we missed you.
Yeah, we missed you too. I saw Mecca. Mecca was our facilitator for
our convening. She was at my event too.
Yeah, she was amazing. My Good Muslim Award is to Aisha Yacoub, who is the founder of this group in Atlanta called the Georgia Muslim Voter Project. And they've been getting out the Muslim vote in Atlanta and surrounding areas. I got to meet her a year ago, and she just reminded me of myself when I was at 24. I'm much older than 24 now and very tired. And she just was like running a mile a minute. And she's like, I want to start this convening and I want to bring together Muslims that do voter stuff. I was like, yeah, girl, you go do that. I'll support you from afar. And she did it. Within 3 months, she brought together this convening of 40 Muslim civic engagement folks. And we had a convening this past weekend and it was amazing. It was what I wish I had when I started doing voter engagement work, which was 17 years ago now. And when I started doing voter engagement work, I was all about trying to figure out how do we get Muslim folks to register to vote and build that political power, and how do we do this for brown people? And I found some people, and obviously I started South Asian American Voting Youth in 2004, but to be able to have something like this was fascinating. And it was just, it filled my soul. And they were all younger than me. I was like one of the oldest people in the room. So then I was just like, oh my gosh, this is like the new generation of folks that are doing this work. So
that's awesome.
It was, I'm starting to feel that whole like kind of being an elder in the community thing at this ripe old age of late 30s. I mean, activist space is very young. It was so amazing. I'm so excited to hear how all these groups are going to be getting out the Muslim vote. If you're interested in doing Muslim voter engagement stuff, reach out to me. This is like what I'm all about. And I think we're going to turn things in this November's election.
I think they know that and they're not going to let that happen. But
well, we are going to game them on top of their gaming us. We're going to figure this out.
With a New Year's cracker box confetti surprise.
Woo!
All right, I have a good Muslim award.
Yeah.
Okay, so I went to the Muslim Protagonist event that was coordinated by Tasneem Ibrahim of the MSA at Columbia.
Yeah.
Shout out to her. When we were there, there was a panel with Leah Vernon.
Yeah, so cool.
And I know her Instagram, Shadbot, which you should follow, which is super hot. And Leah Vernon's Instagram, they were Instagram stars. And, okay, there was a little girl in the audience.
How did the little girl even know to come to this thing?
Okay, so I thought that she was, like, there because her mom was interested in the panels. They had been there the entire day.
Yeah.
And then it turns out she gets up and she asks a question.
What?
Yeah. She gets up and she asks a question. She asks Leah, when somebody yells at you while they're driving by because you're wearing hijab, just how do you stop that from making you just feel so bad?
Oh.
She's seven.
Oh my gosh.
She's 7 years old.
Makes me want to cry.
Everybody's eyes just welled up with tears. And she was taking notes in her notebook.
Oh my gosh.
And then I talked to her mom afterwards because she's amazing.
Yeah.
And her mom was telling me that they were there because of her, because the Muslim Protagonist pamphlet came to the house.
Oh my gosh. She doesn't even have email or internet. She's just like straight up old school flyer in the mail. She saw it and was like, I want to go to this.
She's seven.
I'm seven.
So she was looking through like the parents' junk mail.
Oh my gosh.
Which like I used to look for Lucky Charms coupons.
Yeah, me too.
Not like the Muslim Protagonist pamphlet at Columbia University. And she asked her parents to go. They coordinated it for her.
Oh, my gosh.
They drove out. And I was like, you came here from Pennsylvania. And she was like, yeah, it's an hour and a half away. Which I, like, cried just hearing that. Because in L.A., everything, including CVS, is an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, oh, my God. So she brought her mom out and everything. And she was taking notes.
Okay. So you saw her notebook, right? Because you asked to see her notes.
Yes.
And what was next are the notes that she was taking?
She had written notes about authenticity.
Oh.
She had taken a lot of notes on what Mecca had said.
Yeah.
Mecca Ali was there from the Identity Politics podcast. Shout out to Ikhlas and Mecca. Oh, my God. I put it on my Instagram. You can check it out. Zara Comedy. It's there.
You said she was working on a book.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you for reminding me because this was amazing. Well, do I give her book away? I don't know. I'm going to consult with her on that. You know what? That we're pen pals now.
You are pen pals. The thing that I loved was that she was taking, what you said was that she was taking notes and that, like, you turn the page and she's like, I'm working on my book right now.
Oh, that's right. I'm so glad you remember that. This is really what I needed today. You're reminding me of all the joyful things. Because after the news broke about the appointee yesterday and the fears I have for Iran, I just forgot everything.
Oh my gosh, this is one of the most beautiful stories I remember you ever telling.
She had a heart around the title of her future podcast.
Oh, so cute.
Just Ask Reem.
Well, I think we should take this positive energy. And even though the world is full of terror and ugliness, there's a 7-year-old out there working on her book, working on a podcast, in a cute little glow-in-the-dark notebook.
Oh, yeah. Her notebook lit up. It was so good.
And just full of, I mean, you know, this is why we do this. This is, like, yeah, new generation of, like, young people who are, like, seeing us on stage. And I mean, that feels very, like, selfish, but you know what I mean.
Well, no, here's the thing is that, like, we get a lot of folks who think that, oh, I'm not going to mention the stuff that I'm working on, the ways that you inspired me because I don't want to fangirl or whatever. But that's literally what we're.
Oh, my God.
Like,
yeah.
That's what we live for. Oh, like, yeah. I totally live for it.
I love impact. At AWP, I got, like, hugged awkwardly by a few fans of ours. I love that. That's See, cool. We love it.
We love it. Taz loves hugs.
Yeah. Consensual. Not randomly, please. But yeah, we love this. You know, I honestly, for me, the Muslim voter thing was like, it kind of made me feel like, you know, the work we're doing is making a difference. Like, this isn't a sprint. This is a marathon. It's been a long time coming. I mean, this girl who you talked to, she wasn't even alive during September 11th. You know, like, we've been doing this work for a long time.
She wasn't alive 7 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know what happened 7 years ago, but yeah, 7 years ago.
She was born.
Yes.
She's seven. See, this is what happens when you fly. You can't do math either.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a good note to end on, this kind of positivity.
Yeah, I needed this.
Yeah, we totally needed this. So go forth, find joy in this time of terror.
And do you know what else we need?
We need an intern.
We still need an
intern. We actually got a couple of people interested in our inbox. We've been too busy to respond to the tier. No.
But I do need, like, I do need some of y'all to, like, actually send resumes and not just inquiries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, just instead of saying, what do you want? Yeah. Just tell us what you can do.
Yeah. Hyperlink to your LinkedIn profile.
Send me your CV.
Okay. I have one thing I want to plug. I don't have any public events going on next month, but I do want to plug the Terrible Thanks for Asking podcast I was a guest on.
Which was amazing. It was really good. I listened to it 5 times.
I know I mentioned it in our last show, but I want to mention it again because it was so beautifully sound engineered. I thought my storytelling was just like, eh, but they like chopped it up into this amazing storytelling. So please
and
do check it out.
And also your storytelling was fantastic.
Because and they had an awesome.
Nora's amazing.
Nora's amazing. Their engineer's amazing.
I've fallen in love with her and the show.
Yeah, so good. I think it is the only podcast I listen to every episode as soon as it comes out.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's very highly bingeable.
What do you have coming up?
I'm going to be in Chicago. I'm going to be in New York.
Oh.
I'm giving Kamau Bell an award.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
He's so deserving of it.
I'm going to be in Chicago with Define American.
Oh.
Yeah. Going to do some comedy.
Nice.
And then maybe New Zealand, maybe Canada. I don't know.
Oh, cool. I want to go to New Zealand.
Let's go.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, okay.
Tomorrow, fly us out. Bye!
Bye, y'all.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Comedy. That's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community. You are not a terrorist.
Thank you. You are not a terrorist either, Tess.
Thank you.